Rabbit Hole, your favorite Bitcoin podcast.
But I don't want to go among mad people.
Oh, you can't help that. Most everyone's mad here.
All right, welcome to the first Down the Rabbit Hole of 2021. The price of Bitcoin right now for Bitbo.io is $35,962. And I'm sitting here with American Hoddle today. Hoddle, how are you?
Dude, I'm doing good. Happy to be here.
We've got just chaos going on in the world. We're just going to sit here and talk about some Bitcoin.
I love it. You know, if we didn't have Bitcoin, I would just be so fucking depressed. Like, Bitcoin is the only thing that, like, everybody, you know, all my friends, like, I meet up at the bar with them. Obviously, 2020 was like a total shit show, and we're still in the middle of it. I meet up at the bar with these guys, and they're just like this low level, low grade depression. Everyone's drinking too much. Like, a couple of my buddies got back on pills. I don't want to say anything about it, you know, because I was like, I get it. It's been a hard fucking year. But just that low level depression that's everywhere. And then I meet up with the Bitcoiners. It's like everyone's got a pep in their step. They're like, hey, what's up, man? We're taking on the fucking global reserve currency. It's just such a different attitude thing.
Yeah, I mean, Bitcoin is the only hope that I, if I didn't have Bitcoin, exactly like you said, if I didn't have Bitcoin right now, I would have no hope. Seeing what's happening, people are storming the Capitol right now. I mean, it's everything's crazy. And what is it? Bitcoin just broke the all-time high. What is it? It looks like we just took a dip like 10 minutes ago, but 35.8. That's the all-time high. It's like right before we started recording. So, I mean, It's like we have all of this chaos going on in the world. We have other countries looking at America saying, okay, this is how the model for the world for democracy and voting is now handling their election, and Bitcoin, the insurance policy on chaos, is just taking off.
Totally. And it's like, just get some, man. Come on. How many times we got to tell you? Look around at the world you live in. Like, it should, you know, I shouldn't have to tell you to read the Bitcoin Standard. Like, I shouldn't have to tell you to go listen to the Stefan Levera podcast or the Down the Rabbit Hole podcast. It should be obvious. Look around at the world you live in.
Like we saw with Michael Saylor, right? This guy, obviously, he's one off. You know, I mean, the dude went to MIT. He's a smart individual. But we have the resources now. All the people writing, all the people speaking, all the people, you know, putting out content into the world and educating, that you can go from zero to, okay, I understand the full case and everything in between, you know, in a couple months, which it was not like that. I remember when I first got into Bitcoin and I was like, dude, there's nothing out there and I don't know who to trust about what this is. And I don't know what is real and what's not. And trying to decipher how things worked in 2016 was like, okay, you know, at least for me, that's how it was. And now it's like, okay, well, there's 15 books, you know, there's all these podcasts. So it's like things are really shaping up and the ecosystem's really developing.
It was super confusing back in the day. I mean, like the educational resources, like this podcast is a perfect example. The educational resources we have now are just tremendous. And, you know, the community has really like blossomed. It used to be that you had to do Bitcoin alone, like in a dark room, you know, like doing your private key management, like draw the blinds and like don't let anybody, you know, it was like it felt sort of like weird and seedy and you'd be a little paranoid about what you were doing and like, is this illegal, is the government gonna make all that shit. And now we just have this like awesome community on Twitter mainly, and you know, it's like it's so great to just be with all the people who see it the same way you do. And like, yeah, we're in an echo chamber for sure, but you know, our echo chamber keeps being right. So I kind of like the sound I'm hearing back off the cave wall, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's like an echo chamber for intelligence. Some of the smartest people I know are in Bitcoin, and I read what they're writing and I'm just like, man, like I wish people would wake up to this, because this is the future. But like you just said about the government, you know, banning it or whatever, it looks like we're going the complete opposite of that. I mean, with the OCC this week coming out and saying now that they U.S. banks have to treat public blockchains like Bitcoin, like they treat Swift and ACH and Fedwire, and that they're going to, like, you know, banks are going to be running nodes and Lightning nodes. And, you know, it's, we could have final settlement on the Bitcoin blockchain. Like that's, it's like one side of our government is saying we're extremely bullish and we're going to like let this happen. and then another side of the government's, you know, kind of on a different page. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, I was when I saw that news from the OCC, I was just like, oh yeah, we won. It's over. The war is over. Like, we won. You know what I mean? What are you going to do about it? Like, we didn't even have to Trojan horse it. They just invited the whole army in. You know what I mean? They were like, come on in. We're doing Bitcoin now. Like, that was seriously how I felt about it, because that is what Bitcoin is. It's a global final settlement layer, you know, that non-trusted actors, people that hate each other, can all use. Bitcoin is for enemies, right? And it's like, Bitcoin is just the truth. Anybody can plug into it and use it the way in which they want to. And the thing that Bitcoin does best is, you know, send value across the world in a fully verifiable and censorship resistant way. So like, and that has so many use cases, right? So it's like, of course, like, they were always going to have to, you know, use Bitcoin as part of their system. Now, like, some of the questions arise, like, are they going to try and co-opt it? And what, you know, other regulations are we going to get? Are they going to be burdensome, et cetera? And like, the whole game is touch and go, and like, we'll see how things play out. But this was a pretty big one where I was like, yeah, okay. they're ready to, you know, make some money off of this too. They're ready to accept this as a new paradigm, and they're not going to fight it. They figured it's better to let it in and see if they can control it. We'll see if they can control it. I don't think they can. I think they think they can, and their hubris is going to ultimately doom them, which is great. I love seeing that too.
And so I'm going to push back a little bit on this. Why do you think that they can't control it?
Why do I think they can't control it?
Yes.
Yeah. I just think for instance, gold in a centralized vault is very easy to control because you have physical, you know, you have physical control of all the gold that you have acquired, right? What happens if you co-opt Bitcoin, but the community has the means to fork you off? So like, you did acquire a bunch of Bitcoin, but then the community decides, yeah, we don't like that version of Bitcoin, and they fork you off, and now you have GovCoin and Bitcoin, right? Like, it's just, there are things, it's like you acquiring all the gold and us teleporting it out without you even knowing it occurred.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. That's a great answer. That's exactly what I was hoping you would say, is like, essentially, like, the idea that the Bitcoin is the people's money is that it will always be the people's money. And if we find something that goes wrong with this chain, you know, we'll fork off and we'll find the new version of the people's money, and that will be Bitcoin.
Yeah. And because Bitcoin is so abstract, I mean, in many regards, Bitcoin lives in the hearts and minds of the participants of the Bitcoin network. Right. So like, you know, people want to say things like, there would be a, you know, what if quantum computing broke Bitcoin and all this kind of stuff? And like, yeah, I guess that, you know, that's a non-zero possibility. Right now, quantum computing is not very robust, so it could, in theory, in the future. But, you know, we have the UTXO set, so we could just reset it to be quantum resistant. And as long as the vast majority of participants agreed to it, which they would, because who, you know what I mean? Like, I guess some people maybe would use the quantum chain, the quantum people, but most of us, I think, would want to see it go back to reset before the attack happened. And just the ability to port that UTXO set over is like, you know, Bitcoin has not only 9 lives, but like infinite lives. So I think sometimes the criticisms you hear about Bitcoin are short-sighted, or they're from people who don't fully understand just the wild and, you know, very foreign alien concepts. Your abilities that Bitcoin has or possesses.
Aliens. Is that where we're going? So one of the questions was, when will humans step foot on Mars? That was from the audience. So I'll just throw that in there. Kind of vibes with the alien.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Well, it's probably going to be Elon who takes us there, right? And he looks like he's dancing around getting Tesla on a Bitcoin standard, which I like. And I mean, I think once you understand how Bitcoin corrects for malinvestment, because, okay, like, Peter Thiel has this thing, his founder's fund slogan is, you know, we were supposed to have flying cars and we got 140 characters instead. So it's like, yeah, we have apps like Twitter and stuff, but really those are dumb, meaningless bullshit. What we all want is flying cars. We want the Jetsons future. We want to be on Mars. We want to be multiplanetary, et cetera, right? And the reason we haven't is because there's just been this tremendous misallocation of capital. People are not taking bets, you know, taking risks and then getting rewarded by the market. They're just capturing the flows from the Fed. And so once we get back on a Bitcoin standard, there will be much harder economic calculation that's going on. And that creates discovery in terms of innovation. So yeah, people are going to, you know, there's going to be catastrophic failures. Like, that's what happens in capitalism, but you're going to learn from those catastrophic failures rather than a system where you have a catastrophic failure and the government resets it. And they're like, yeah, this didn't happen. Go back to business as usual. All the airlines are still profitable. We're just going to give you guys a bunch of fucking money, you know?
Yeah. It's the typical government intervention comes in, sets a price floor, allows these government monopolies to exist. And it's the same thing we keep perpetuating in the fiat narrative, the Keynesian narrative. Like, it's not even capitalism. It's the most flawed version of capitalism. But yeah, in the Bitcoin standard, I mean, when we have a scarce resource scarce money that we're trying to, you know, exchange for value, the allocation of capital is going to be much more scrutinized. And it's going to be, you know, we're not going to have these zombie companies that are not profitable just lingering around in the market that, you know, could potentially be a black hole for investment. Like, it's, if your company's not profitable, you'll be driven out of the marketplace very quickly.
Right. And, you know, people hear that and they're like, well, that's mean or whatever. And it's like, well, listen, we're talking about the capital allocators who sit atop the businesses. I mean, if you're working at an airline as a baggage handler and, you know, the company goes bust, well, people are going to come in, scoop up the, you know, the assets of the airline, and you're still going to have a job as a baggage handler. Like, this is for people who are capital allocators, and those are the rules of the game. Those are the real rules of capitalism. The system of cronyism that we have, it, you know, it basically prevents humanity from flourishing. And I think under a Bitcoin standard, like, we don't even know like what we're capable of. You know, humans are very smart, but every human is like an emergent property of the system with which they operate in. And so because we're all on, I mean, I'm not, but like we come from the fiat operating system, that it limits us. It's a limiter for human potential. And Bitcoin operating system is like, think about it. You yourself as the individual, all you have to do is be more disciplined, more intelligent, more ready to sit through discomfort and exhibit like what we generally consider superhuman abilities, and you will be rewarded with outsized returns. And then you can then use those turns as a lever with which to move the fucking world. So it puts so much power back into the hands of the individual. And, you know, the individuals are the ones who drive the world, not nameless, faceless bureaucrats in government. They don't do shit. Like, it's individuals who change things.
What about nameless individuals or faceless individuals? Satoshi nameless, but Satoshi, I mean, faceless changed the world.
Keyword is bureaucrat. Bureaucrats.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Speaking of bureaucrats, they're scared for their life right now.
Yeah, definitely. They feel like, I don't know, the bureaucracy that we have in our current system, I think that they are so hubristic. I actually don't think they're scared. I think that they think they have control over that. I mean, it kind of looks like they fudged an election, right? And a lot of that was the entrenched oligopoly and the bureaucracy. And it was just all of them colluding in a way to cheat just a little bit. And like, listen, people will be like, oh, you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. There was absolutely no fraud. There was definitely fraud. It just happened. Some of it happened to be legal. Most of it, I think, happened to be legal. But when big tech and big media both collude against the president, that's a type of fraud for sure. It's a legal type of fraud, but it's a type of fraud.
Yeah, so you speak a lot about this, and I think it plays into exactly what we're seeing. Well, I know it plays into exactly what we're seeing right now, like with people storming the Capitol, with everything we've seen in 2020, honestly, all through Trump's presidency leading up, you know, to 2020, is just this battle between individualism and collectivism. And I know you like to talk about this. So I'd like you to tie this into everything we're seeing like right now, and then how this plays into, you know, the ideas of like the fourth turning and then Bitcoin.
Yeah, totally, man. There's a lot of directions you can go with that one.
You can start with one and then I can add a couple more.
Yeah, it's very, you know, it's very, when people are powerless, when people have no ownership in their society, they tend to collectivize because they want to, you know, flip the board, because the game is not serving them, and it's only serving a tiny fraction at the top. And so in a move towards collectivism, individuals get trampled underfoot by the collectivists. It's like, you know, you go online and 10 years ago, it was like you looking at cat photos and shit. And now you go online, somebody screams at you that you're a racist if you don't, say these slogans, and like they do this childish sort of activism towards you. And you as the individual are just sitting there thinking like, fuck these people. You know what I mean? Like, I support racial justice, but I'm not going to fucking bend over backwards to you who's screaming in my face, right? And we saw a lot of that this year. And just, you know, all these different collectivist tendencies always erode individual liberties, right? And, you know, the smallest minority, if you want to talk about injustices, is the minority of one. It's the minority of the individual, because individuals are always sacrificed for the collective. It's like, hey man, let's just throw that virgin in the volcano so that we can have a sweet corn harvest this year. Just because we've evolved past that, the actual murder of somebody, doesn't mean that we don't do reputational, economic, you know, and social violence to people in much the same manner. Humans are animals. Like, this is just a pattern that repeats over time. And so it's kind of looking dark for individual liberties in every area except Bitcoin, where the individual can have an outsized, return, and they can do things. Like, you basically get, when you have that much capital accrued to you from Bitcoin, it's like a superpower. Like, let's assume Satoshi's still alive and he has 1 million coins. At $1 million a coin, Satoshi's the world's first trillionaire, and he's an Anon. Like, what? That's fucking crazy. And all he did was figure out, you know, a recipe and then release the code for that recipe, you know, basically by solving the Byzantine generals problem. And now he has become the most powerful individual on the planet, right? And Bitcoin does that for every individual who, you know, upgrades their operating system to the Bitcoin OS, basically.
Do you think Satoshi's still alive?
I like to believe in my heart he's still alive, yeah. But he could easily be dead. We don't know. It'd be awesome if he was still alive, right? Because it would perpetuate his the myth of Satoshi, because it's so superhuman to have $35 billion or whatever he has at the moment of the recording of this podcast and never have spent a single dime of it. Like, there's no human on the planet who's ever done that.
That's a long time preference.
Yeah, it immediately elevates him into this otherworldly figure, somebody with just immense discipline, foresight, intelligence. Like, so yeah, of course, I would still love for him to be alive.
So when you're looking at these, like this battle, but like you said, between individualism and collectivism, and you see all of what's happening in society today, and then you hear people like Brandon Quidham, and they talk about the fourth turning, and all of these timelines sort of line up with 2030, ironically. And if you go back through history and you look at these four turnings, and it's like this 90-year cycle that goes on, and I'm not an expert in it by any means, but now we actually come to a time where we have a diverged road. Like, we have two paths. We can go down the cycle that we've been continuing to go down, where we eventually will, you know, give up our civil liberties, hand them over probably to some sort of authoritarian government. And, you know, that brings on this 2030, you know, we live in a completely different society type of idea. Or there is a mechanism to bring about that individual freedom and that sovereignty that we always talk about, which is Bitcoin. So it's like, we now have this huge battle of like all these different, you know, demographic forces and, you know, social forces and, you know, now fiscal and economic forces. And they're all kind of leading up to this, you know, I don't know, a climax is what I'm thinking. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it seems right to me. And it's also like, humans, but I think the reason for these cycles is that humans suffer from recency bias. And so we think if it hasn't happened in our lifetimes, that it's impossible for it to happen. And so it's kind of like we're living in a historical blind spot right now. And those of us that do know a little bit about history can see it coming. Guys like Brandon, or, you know, guys like whoever wrote The Fourth Turning, I forget his name, Neil something, right? But yeah, it seems like we're just doomed to repeat these cycles. Like, this is just how humanity operates. So if you're one of the people who can see it coming, like, get out of its way or get on the right side of it. Because I you know, the idea of a techno-utopian, like, Eastern, you know, Chinese social media credit score, AI controlled, central, you know, economically planned, basically like hybrid socialist capitalist system is frightening to me. And I obviously don't want that to occur in America. America is, you know, a land built on individual liberties and individual freedoms, and it will remain so until the day America dies. And so, you know, the further we get down that path towards collectivism, the worse things become in America as Americans. And if America falls, it's sort of like the Alamo of the world. Where else is there to go? Like, sometimes I hear Bitcoiners say, you know, I'm going to move to like a small island country and, you know, whatever. It's like, that's great. What happens when China decides they have an interest in that country? You're fucked, right? So like, we have to defend our freedoms here as Americans, and we have to defend our freedoms as Bitcoiners, because these are God-given rights. I don't ask permission to store my value and my time. I don't ask permission to move freely about this world. These are my rights as a, you know, a sovereign individual.
Free men don't ask.
Exactly.
So Joe Rogers had a question about Citadel theory. So if we're looking at what's happening after in the next 5-10 years, let's say Bitcoin plays out and we now have this massive redistribution of wealth and, you know, capital and restructuring of society. He's asking, what do you think permanent citadels, like, do you think permanent citadels will be a thing, or do you think it'll be more like nomadic tribes that travel from these private cities and they're free to just, you know, move from one to the other?
I think citadel theory arises from the mental construct that is Bitcoin's ability to defend against attackers. But it gets silly when you say you're going to have a central location with high walls. You know, it's like hearkening back to an older time. You know, first of all, like, one of the easiest ways to defeat a citadel is just to siege it, just to wait until the people inside die of disease and hunger, right? So like, not even counting that nowadays, the, you know, your enemies could just fly a helicopter over you and drop bombs on your ass. Like, until there's like something like, you know, drone swarms or something, the idea of having like a physically located citadel it's pretty stupid. But the idea of the citadel sort of being like a mental construct which grows outwards from you, I think is real. And I like that version of the theory. It's basically like this. Like, I have an amount of wealth that I could store in my head and no one can take it from me. They could jail me, they could torture me, you know, all sorts of things, but they can't actually get to the wealth because I stand in front of them, right? So like, that power that I'm now imbued with, it grows outwards, you know, from me into the world. Like, I think that's more like the citadel is you, it's your mind. You know, it's not like a place you go, it's like a place you go in your mind.
I do like the idea of being able to freely travel, and, you know, because all of my wealth and capital is stored in my mind. But I don't know where I stand on citadel theory yet. I think it almost is a little primitive. It's like, we have this ideology of Bitcoin, or there's this religion of Bitcoin, and we like these principles of it, like one of those being, you know, decentralization. And now you want to try to apply that to something else. I don't know. I don't know how it works out. We'll see. Maybe I'm completely wrong on that, but I think it's a long time before we see citadels.
I mean, it's just the idea of a citadel being physical that's stupid. That's the stupid idea. The idea that Bitcoiners will get together and, you know, collude and share notes and work on projects together, that's the real citadel. And that is happening now and is going to continue rapidly accelerating. Like, because for me, I talked to somebody who's operating on the Fiat OS, and I talked to somebody who's operating on the Bitcoin OS, you know, the Fiat people are just slaves. I mean, just straight up. And so you're like, why am I talking to this drone who's just parroting to me what they heard on the news, right? Like, and I get people think, like, when you hear that, it sounds like I drank the Kool-Aid and I'm deep in a cult and stuff. And totally, I did. But it's real, man. Because Bitcoiners are imbued with that, you know, that power. And they have an individualistic mindset. They're optimistic. They're focused on the future. They want to change things. And just that is the energy and the vibe that I'm looking to fucking, you know, like those are the people I want to be my friends. Those are the people who I want to raise my children around. So yeah, like Bitcoiners are going to congregate. They're just not going to live in a fucking castle. That's fucking stupid.
Yeah. And let's introduce a single point of failure for like all of us. Let's just put us all behind one wall and one big capital, one big castle, like the 1500s.
Yeah. It's also like, it's antithetical to Bitcoin's, you know, entire ethos, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So we have another question about what should plebs do with their Bitcoin if there's an EMP event?
Well, if you're not keeping your hardware wallet or in a Faraday cage or a Faraday bag, you're fucking up, because mine is. So if an EMP happens, like, first of all, I got the device secured. Second of all, you got the seed, so you're good. I guess I would just say, plus we have the Blockstream satellite, and an EMP is not, unless it's a solar flare, an EMP is not going to be global. And even if it was a solar flare, wouldn't it only hit the half of the world that was daytime? I don't know. That's a question I have to Google. But it's not going to be solar. If it is solar and it fucks up the entire world, well, then I guess we're all just fucked, bro. We're just going to have to start over the block, you know, from the satellite, get the data when we get back.
This is when we go back a couple hundred years and we'll start carrying gold around.
This is Peter Schiff's fantasy. But yo, for practical advice, you can get a Faraday bag on Amazon for like $12. So get one.
You should definitely have one if you don't have a Faraday cage. Oh man, we get 36. It looks like.
Oh, we're going to hit 36. I like it.
Looks like, I think we did, didn't we? Nope.
Pretty close. 35957.
We may hit it.
You know what's funny? I was standing literally in the room I'm standing in, doing a podcast just like this on March 12th. And I was doing Car Camp It. And he told me during the middle of the pie, he was like, oh yeah, we just hit like 4,200. So like now standing here in the same spot I was standing only like what, 8 months, 9 months later. And you're like, yeah, we just hit 36K. Like it's so, so insane.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We literally just hit it as you said that. So yeah, earlier this year, you could get 20,000 sats per dollar. And now I'm looking at it and you can get 2,700.
Hyper Bitcoinization comes at you quick. You know what I mean?
So, okay. So you've been talking about this a lot on your Twitter. The image of the, what is it? The German mark with, in gold. And now you're comparing it to Bitcoin and the graph is like lays on top of each other almost perfectly. Is this what's been keeping you up at night lately?
That shit is frightening. Because, you know, honestly, I told my wife, we had that day like 4 or 5 days ago, like where it went up like $4,000 in a day, almost $5,000. And it just felt too fast. And I was just telling her, I was like, if this doesn't stop, like I'm saying, like I'm gaming it out, right? And I'm like, if we're living in a world where tomorrow I wake up and it's $5,000 and the next day I wake up and it's 10. And the next day I wake up and it's 30. And I was like, we have to shut off all social media and possibly leave the country, because like we are heading for total dollar collapse and society will be absolute dog shit for years and years, right? So like, I actually want, you know, I don't want to see a Weimar event. I know that like people slander us and say that we're pessimists who want to see the world go to shit. I absolutely do not want the world to go to shit. I want a slow, orderly onboarding onto the Bitcoin arc. That's what I want. And I want to save every single person. Not as many people as I can. Every single fucking person. I want them saved before things go bad. That's what I want. So like when I look at the Weimar chart and then I look at the fucking Bitcoin price and it looks like it's creeping up the Weimar chart, it starts to get really, really nervous. And like, it's a crazy feeling because my personal wealth would be insane, but the world would go to shit, right? It's kind of like a thought experiment where like, hey, do you want to be a billionaire in a Mad Max world? You know what I mean? It's like, not really. Kind of want to go to fancy French restaurants and drink wine and have people leave me alone. That's, you know.
Okay, how about we flip it though? So would you give up all of your Bitcoin and all of your personal wealth to see it succeed?
To see the dollar succeed?
no, to see the Bitcoin standard succeed, but you just had to start, let's say you had to start at like, once Bitcoin's at $10 million, you can start stacking again.
Oh, okay.
And you had to give up all of what you had just so it would succeed.
But I was like, and the alternative would be it goes to it zero. Fails. So, okay, the alternative so I'm choosing, yeah. Then yes, I would give up my personal wealth to see Bitcoin succeed. Well, I'm a smart guy. I would do well in the Bitcoin economy. And you know, it fixes the world, right? So it's like, I would much rather live in a beautiful world where I'm less rich than live in, you know, because it's like, I'm not rooting on the collapse, man. These problems were put in place 50 fucking years ago. And I'm just looking at it as a smart, sane, rational person being like, how do I fucking defend myself and protect what I have, you know, against the coming storm? And Bitcoin is the answer to that, right? Like, I fucking hate when people slander us and they're like, you're rooting it on. Like, no, that was the gold bugs, okay? Go talk to those dumbasses. That's how they felt. They were the doom and gloomers. We're rational optimists. Like, we're excited about the future. I want the future to be fucking fantastic.
Yeah, and we're presented with a massive problem over a complex system. And we're looking at a rational solution and saying, okay, this is the best option. There is no other option.
The people that always say that the most are the fiat billionaires, like Mark Cuban, or, you know, Peter Schiff is rich in fiat. That's what they say. And it's like, no, just because you might be repriced in a Bitcoin standard, you know, for most people, the world is not the same as it is for you, Mark Cuban. Most people are having a hard time getting housing. They're having a hard time paying for medical for their family. They're having a hard time educating their children with appropriate and good education. So it's going to be a lot better for everybody. If it's worse for you personally, well, that's just, it is what it is. You're still going to own a sports team. You know, like, I don't know why they complain. It makes no sense to me.
Well, it's looking at a problem and saying there's two different answers, right? We're saying that one answer is Bitcoin. People that are indoctrinated by fiat and fiat's monetary system are saying, okay, we should just give everybody free money because it's not their fault that they're broke.
Yeah. And it's like, well, when you give everybody free money, everything just becomes more expensive. So it's, you know, it's meaningless. It's like, if we could literally give people free money, I would do it, right?
It's like saying, I feel really bad for this heroin addict going through withdrawals. Let me just inject him real quick. Like, he'll feel better. It's like, yeah, morally, you can rationalize that and say, sure, he feels better. Is it better for him in the long term? No.
I'm so confused why I'm supposed to respect the quote unquote Nobel Prize winning economist when they're basically saying the same thing. If I asked a 6-year-old what we should do with the global economy, it's like, well, I just think we should give everybody infinity dollars. That's what economists are saying. It's like, that's what 6-year-olds say. It doesn't fucking work. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. I should give the next 6-year-old that tells me we should give everybody infinity dollars a fucking Nobel Prize, because that's where we're at now in fiat society.
Yeah, but you're crazy if you present anything else.
Well, yeah, it's like, well, we're all stuck, so just deal with it. It's like, I'm not stuck, you're stuck. You're stuck in your own mind, dude. Get the fuck out of that fucking negative thought pattern. Buy some Bitcoin. Like, yeah, we're all late to Bitcoin. Like, Matt Odell's phrase is stay humble, because you have to be humble to even get here in the fucking first place. We all missed it. I missed it in 2012. I heard about it. I didn't get it until late 2014, and the price had, you know, gone crazy on me like it does. And so it's like, and the people that got in before me, they missed it because they could have been mining for free, right? Everybody fucking misses it. So you have to humble yourself. That's step one. Humble yourself and get some Bitcoin. The end.
That's not the end. Then you got to keep stacking, keep getting Bitcoin.
Well, that's true. That's true too, obviously.
And then learn why you should be holding it in the first place.
I was talking to a girl who had, she told me she bought at 17,000. In December, and she just totally forgot about it for, like, you know, until right now. And then her friend had bought at the same time. They went in together, and her friend had started actively stacking sats, and that friend is now doing really well. And she's like, man, why wasn't I stacking? Like, why didn't I build my conviction during the bear market and stuff like that? And so, yeah, taking an active mindset instead of a passive mindset with Bitcoin is going to make you much more prosperous.
So it looks like we're approaching, like when we go back to the conversation about the wine mart, like what Parker Lewis talks about with gradually then suddenly. So how far do you think we are from suddenly?
Man, it's really hard to know, right? Because, you know, it's like, have you seen that turkey chart, a turkey at Thanksgiving? It's like the global economy is basically like, you know, it's like you're living your life as a turkey. It's like you're getting fed really well. You know, you're living outside, your life is kick ass. Thanksgiving comes and they fucking chop your head off. You know, so we don't know how suddenly it can truly occur. It can be very, very, very rapid. So that's why I was staring at the Weimar chart and I was having feel like, cause when the price was going up so much, I think if I went back and looked, honestly, I was probably being scared because I have the wrong nominal price in my head and not, I wasn't actually scared of the price rise, because if you look at it on a percentage basis, it wasn't that high. Just to me and personally, you know, $5,000 is like on top of the price as somebody who is coming in at $200 Bitcoin. It's like just still very hard to wrap my mind around. So like, I'm not seeing it like that we're, let me say it like this. I'm not seeing it that it's happening, that the Weimar situation is happening. But I'm also, I used to be at like a very low percentage that would occur. Like I would say maybe I was at a 5% possibility that would occur. And now I'm at like a 20% possibility that it could occur.
For the cycle?
Yeah, pretty much. If it's gonna happen. It's gonna,
like, yeah, wow.
It's gonna happen rapidly. Like there's not, like the suddenly thing is a very rapid thing. And that's coming. So if, you know, Bitcoin goes up to like 200 or 300K this cycle, and then it falls back, that's probably a better thing for the world. But if it goes beyond that, and then it hits a million, and then it hits two, the shit is gonna get rocky real quick, because there's it's nothing but thin air above that, right? And like the dollars need a place to park themselves.
All right, one last question, then we'll get away from price talk. Okay, so if you had to put a nominal amount on Bitcoin for the cycle, what do you put it at? Weighing the probabilities that you just mentioned.
Yeah, my minimum, my bear case is 225. So that's like absolutely minimum. I think we're going to 225 before 2022 or at the beginning of 2022. If I'm being a little more bullish, I think $1 million is within reason. Like I would put $1 million at like maybe a, legitimately, I'd put it at a 50 or 55% possibility or probability.
A 55% possibility?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it could easily occur.
I mean, it is scary seeing. I mean, so I wrote this article for Bitcoin Magazine a couple days ago, and I was like looking into, you know, the number of companies and that have, you know, bought Bitcoin, especially this year. And it's like after 2020, you know, almost 6% of the total supply has been bought, and it's like 25 companies. I mean, it's genuinely insane. Like once they get, like, I think in that game theory is coming in 2021 with, you know, all the social events that we've already kind of talked about earlier, and, you know, this crazy monetary policy that's going to get worse this next year.
When we've also created a really strong, you know, stacking and hodling culture. And so that is going to further reduce supply. And so there's not going to be a ton of supply available on these exchanges. I mean, yeah, people are going to sell off at certain price points, 100K, 200, you know, et cetera, 50K, people probably sell. But I think those sellers are going to be people who don't have a lot of coin for the most part. And I think the whales who do have a lot of coin are expecting to see much, much, much higher prices. And there's nothing really much outside of a familial home, maybe a little bit of land, that makes much sense to diversify into at the moment. Like, I'm not really sure I want to buy a cash flow producing business during COVID times and all the insane restrictions we've seen. I don't really want to buy real estate during all the insane restrictions we've seen with COVID. I don't really want to buy commercial real estate because people are working remotely now, right? So it's like, I don't know that there's a lot of things that make sense to diversify out of Bitcoin into. So people are going to hodl really hard. And we'll see where that fucking takes us, you know? And like, I think the one thing that would be, you know, putting us at the lower end of that spectrum, like on the 225 instead of the $1 million price, is people just haven't switched their unit of account. Like, so a lot of the traditional investors are still thinking in dollars. They might still have mandates in dollars and they may need to sell, but you know, conditions change. And so we'll see how it goes. And also, I think the education and the resources that are out there now, like for Michael Saylor, he's a great example. It makes it really easy to get onto a personal Bitcoin standard where you just switch your operating system and you start thinking in Bitcoin. And when that happens, you kind of can't go back, right? Plus, just take any asset, take any asset and put it on the chart against Bitcoin. Your shit is going to zero. Everything's going to zero against Bitcoin. Literally everything in existence.
I tell it to people all the time.
It's hard to see though until you like know it, you know?
I had a buddy, I've been talking to him about Bitcoin easily since I think we lived together in 2017. And I was talking to him about it then. He was paying attention to it, you know, goes by, misses it, comes back around, was gonna buy it like 8K, doesn't buy, like waits. Now it's at 35K. So comes over the other night and we're talking and go deep down the rabbit hole, explain everything, you know, that's going on. And then I say, yeah. And then in 4 years, you know, the supply halves again. And his eyes just widened up and he was like, what are you talking about? I was like, yeah, it's the halving. Or the halving. And he's like, he had heard this concept like 5 times, but now it finally had made sense. Like, holy shit, this is getting absolutely, it's getting more scarce than it even is. It's going to be even harder to obtain in 4 years. So all these companies and maybe governments and, you know, in the next couple of years are going to be buying, and then it's going to be even harder to get. And then again, in 4 years, it's just like the game theory that's going to take place over the next 10, 20, 30 years is going to be crazy.
Nick Carter thinks that basically the halving doesn't cause the price rises because, you know, why would a rational investor basically look at a supply emission schedule change and decide that was had suddenly made something much more valuable? And I think he's wrong. And the reason I think he's wrong is because of what you just said, is because of reflexivity. Humans hear it and it's a narrative that drives itself. I mean, it's just like, wait, like it's just like everything you've ever heard. It's like, wait, they're about to do what? And then the event occurs and then, you know, it causes people to pile in. It's like in March, right? When the price collapsed to 3,800 or whatever, I didn't give a fuck about it because I was like, the halving is right around the corner, right? So it's like, nothing can be bearish when the halving is about to happen. So it creates this reflexivity in your mind where you're like, Bitcoin is about to do it again. And then it fucking always does it again. So it's like, whether it's like real or imagined in the hearts and minds of the participants of the Bitcoin network, it doesn't fucking matter. It's all the same. You know, it's like being on a psychedelic and like being like, was it real? Like, did I really go talk to space aliens or did I imagine? It's like, it doesn't fucking matter because the experience was the same, you know?
Yeah, I would say I completely disagree with Nick on that. He's a big efficient market hypothesis guy, which I don't think that applies to anything. You can't look at any market in the world right now and say it's efficient and it makes sense what's happening.
Well, Nick is he's super smart and he's super analytical. And I think for him, if you can't like, you know, quantify and measure it, if it doesn't have a rational case, he doesn't even let it enter his framework. But humans aren't rational. They're not even a little bit rational. There's maybe like less than 0.1% of humans that operate in a rational fashion at any given point in time.
There's so many people that are buying that are literally just buying. It's like, oh, I saw a Dogecoin tweet and it was trending, so I decided to buy it. And it's like, that, okay, you can't tell me that's a rational investment. And the Dogecoin market is efficient because Robinhood investors are buying it because they saw it. Like, there's no version of it that efficient market hypothesis makes sense in my head.
I've been on Clubhouse, that app, talking to noobs for like the last like 3 days, and just like it's the same stuff that comes up over and over again. They're like, so I had a question. Should I buy XRP? And I'm like, no, what the fuck? No. Why would you? The SEC is about to skull fuck them, dude. Don't buy that shit. Like, what are you talking about? Like, they've been building up case law and they've discovered that, or, you know, they're of the opinion that everything they ever did was illegal and they're about to permanently disband them. And everybody's going to just delist them. Like, and they're just like, yeah, so what I heard was maybe just buy a little XRP. And they're like, that's not what I said. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's where we're at in the cycle now. Like, Bitcoiners always like to talk to each other on Twitter where they're like, man, are we just delusional or whatever? It's like, no, you're all just super fucking smart. And your information asymmetry is extreme. When you go talk to regular people, they have no fucking idea the kind of shit we think about, talk about. They've never even considered it, right? Like, most people are just coming in because they want to turn. I was talking to a girl today who wanted to turn her, you know, $180 into $500, and she would be real happy with that. And I was like, well, just put it in Bitcoin and that'll definitely happen. And then you can cash out, you know, but like, to me, that's what's even the point of that, right? Like, you gotta take an active, you know, approach. You gotta start stacking. You gotta really buy in. You gotta educate yourself, and you gotta lower your time preference. You gotta have a long time horizon for these investments. And, you know, listen, market psychology being what it is, people just aren't like that, right? Like, and you have to learn to be like that. You have to like modify your behavior in order to have investing success. Because investing success is not about intelligence. It's about temperament and behavior, and, you know, sort of, it's an attitude thing.
Yeah, it's discipline. And that's what Bitcoin teaches you, stacking, saving money, lowering your time preference. It's all discipline. It's like, yeah, you could go out and you could go sell all your Bitcoin right now. And, you know, I'm sure that'd be great, but it's like, why would you do that if you could have more in the future and not go spend it mindlessly on some, you know, materialistic item?
Yeah, Bitcoin punishes you. You know, if you don't believe in Bitcoin, Bitcoin fucking punishes you, right? Like, every Bitcoin I've ever sold or, you know, used to buy something or gambled is just, you know, dude, I've probably gambled 10 Bitcoins. That's a house right now, right? And when I gambled them, it was certainly not a house. Now it's a house. And now I'm thinking, why did I gamble a house away? That was stupid. That could have been an extra house I owned. What the fuck is wrong with me? You know?
All right, Hoddle, I've got two more questions for you, and then I'll let you get out. These are both from Joe Rogers. Actually, I've got more than two, but favorite handgun / rifle?
You know, honestly, I'm an AK-47 guy. And then handgun. I used to not like Glocks because they're polymer. But now I actually fucking really, like, over the pandemic, I got into Glocks. And so I would say Glock 17, just because, like, the ability to mod it and shit. And, like, there's a lot you can do with it. So.
All right. And favorite beer?
Favorite beer? Deschutes Black Butte Porter. That is so fucking good. And Deschutes Oatmeal Stout. I'm like a dark, like, hearty beer guy.
I've only had one oatmeal stout, but it was pretty damn good. All right. So the last question I have is Mrs. Hoddle. Is she real?
Yeah, she's real. That's my real wife.
That's your real wife? What made her finally decide to join Bitcoin Twitter after 7 years?
I think she was probably just like, yo, I want to see what he fucking does with his time all day. And also, my wife has been, you know, complaining to me about just basically like all the normies and all their bullshit this year and like how, you know, how irrational everything is with COVID and everything. And I was like, yo, you should just hop on Bitcoin Twitter because everybody there fucking agrees with you. Like, we all think this is a bunch of horseshit too. You know, like, instead of trying to have that conversation with people who are scared on Instagram, it's just not going to happen because they're fiat like slaves and they don't want to upset their fiat masters, right? And I was like telling her, I was like, you don't have to give a shit. You can upset whoever you want because you don't have to work and you're never going to have to work. So go ahead, get on Bitcoin Twitter and just like, you know, talk shit with everybody else. Like, it's fucking fun. It makes you feel like you're not alone. Like, you're not crazy. You know, like, you're just like, yeah, fucking, this is bullshit. Like, yes, there's a real virus, but it's a fake pandemic. Thank God I'm allowed to say that somewhere and people agree with me, you know?
Yeah. That's one of the great parts about Bitcoin Twitter. I would say it's one of the bad parts. If you're looking at it from the outside, you're like, these people just all think the exact same way. And you could look at that and be like, oh, these people, you know, they're hypocritical because they're doing exactly what they're complaining about. Like, we just talked about collectivism, yet we all share the same sort of ideas about things, but it's derived from all of us being individuals and then just finding each other. It had nothing to do with us all just happening to start like, oh, I'm going to think this way because you think this way. Yeah. It's like, no, I started to think this way because I thought for myself. And then I met you and you thought the same way. And that's why I like you. So that's what's completely different about Bitcoin.
You know, it's like, I'm not a static person, man. I've tried a lot of different ideologies and I've fallen for a lot of things. And, you know, I've been I went vegan for a little bit. If you would have asked me 5 years ago if I was into Black Lives Matter, I would have been really pro Black Lives Matter. You know, like all sorts of stuff. Like before, and just to clarify, I still definitely support racial justice for Black Americans. I don't support the weird part where it became a white cult for Antifa communist members who have trust funds from their parents. That's the part I don't support, right? But I'm saying, like, I've gone through all these cycles. I've seen, you know, what is real and what is not, and Bitcoin's real. Pretty much everything else is fake. Like, we kind of live in a fake world. It's all sort of fake. And like the big thing, like, that I would like to impart to people, and I wish people would really understand this from a metacognitive perspective, is the idealism of an age is always a cover story for plunder. So, like, the idea that, you know, yes, we lost a lot of jobs in Ohio, and that was an unfortunate side effect of us pulling many, you know, millions of global, citizens who were in poverty, out of poverty, into just a more marginal form of poverty, or a less marginal form of poverty. And therefore, we are great people who deserve a pat on the back. That's like the story that, you know, the globalists have been telling financially for the last 30 fucking years. So don't listen to it, because it's fake.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, I feel like the wars that we've been going through have been getting slowly less and less physical and real. They're becoming like these intangible, esoteric, like sort of just existential ideas that they declare war on. It was like, you know, 120 years ago, we went to war because, like, it was to save the world, you know, and we actually went to physical war. And then we kept doing that for a little while. And then we moved away from, you know, physical war to declaring war on, like, intangible things. Met kind of intangible. It's like drugs. And then it was like terror, which terror is not tangible.
Yeah.
Now it's a war on disease. And then, you know, we're going to have climate, and who knows what else is going to come next, but it's just slowly getting less and less, like, able to define, like, what it is that you're actually trying to get rid of.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then therefore it allows you to do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah. And people. then you just, oh yeah, well, we have to do this, and we need to take this money from you to do that. Oh, you're not going to give us that money? Okay, then we're just going to create the money and steal it from you. It's like, I don't know how you can look at anything that's happening right now in the world and say, like, oh yeah, Tether is what's driving the Bitcoin price. It's like, no, dude, you fucking moron. It's the dollar. What are you talking? How are you even, like, you think four guys at Tether are what's pumping the Bitcoin price? It's like, no, it's like the dollar is the scam. Yeah, of course, Tether is a scam too, but the dollar is the real scam.
That's a really good point. It's like, you know, Tether is doing, even if Tether is printing, they're doing like the baby version of printing, right? And like,
yeah.
And I think the Tether stuff has been thoroughly debunked. I don't think that they're printing, but even, let's say, hypothetically, even they were, you know, it's the baby version of, compared to what the fucking Federal Reserve is doing. Tether could never print as much in their entire existence as the Federal Reserve could do in 5 minutes.
Exactly, like we did in 5 minutes in March.
Yeah, exactly.
HODL, if you want to give one last message to anybody.
You know, really, I think the message is to price the world in Bitcoin. I think you really have to see, like, if your unit of account is still dollars and you listen to a Bitcoin podcast, so you're like, you're in this with us, right? But like, be honest, are you thinking in your head, oh, I'm going to make $1 million? That's stupid. Stop thinking that way. Like, be thinking in sats. Think about the amount of sats that you have, because that's your real net worth. The dollars, you know, eventually everyone's going to own infinity dollars. So don't think, it's not a scarce thing to aspire to. Like, go get, I have one of those, the $100 trillion notes from Zimbabwe. I have one of those in my office, right? And it just reminds me every day, this is a fucking worthless piece of paper, right? Like, I actually had to pay like $30 for it because I had to get it shipped here and everything. But the, I mean, there's nothing preventing a Ben Franklin, you know, that says 100, maybe it'll be Trump on the picture, and it'll say $100 trillion, like, or Joe Biden, whoever. There's nothing preventing that from happening here in America. Literally nothing. We're not special. And so get on a personal Bitcoin standard, dude. Reprice everything in sats. Think about every single purchase. Choose sats. Choose your life. Choose a better you. Choose a better future. Make it happen. Like, so much depends on it. And literally, it's everywhere. So go ahead and be a little insane about it for like a week and see how it feels. Like, think about every single purchase. You buy a stick of gum, go calculate it in sats. And then ask yourself if that stick of gum is fucking worth it to you. Because I bet it's not. The end.
It's a great message. Change your unit of account. Think over the long term and not the short term.
Exactly. Because listen, the world's being repriced in sats. It is. So the sooner you realize that, the sooner you can prosper.
Absolutely, brother. Otto, it was fun. I appreciate you coming on.
All right, dude. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Of course.